Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, so we've all been watching what's happening in the DRC and our involvement there. And unfortunately, we now have 14 South African soldiers who've lost their lives there. I do want to just touch base with people who I think really understand the conflict. And we'll be speaking to a former general in a short while. But I also wanted to get a take from somebody who understands the region quite well. Michaela Rong is a veteran journalist and is someone who's written a really fantastic book on the region. Michaela, thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening.
So let's just go back a little bit, Michaela, because a lot has been said, and obviously you've seen the spat between South Africa and Rwanda, but I just wanted some clarity and for all of us to get a sense of where we are right now. And you know, obviously the conflict is quite complicated. Can you place for us, before we get to M23 and South Africa, can you place for us, for instance, what the DRC itself's position is on the current situation?
Well, the DRC's position is that it has been invaded, that it has been invaded by a M23, which is a rebel group made up of largely Congolese Tutsis, but that behind that group is Rwanda, yep. Its neighbor. Who is providing weapons and strategic planning and equipment and funding. So it regards this as an invasion and a potential land grab, because I think the suspicion is growing in Kinshasa that Rwanda is reaching out to help itself to part of the Kivus, which are one of the most fertile and mineral-rich parts of Congo.
How committed is the DRC to resolving this conflict? And I ask because you keep hearing that they boycott conversations where there is an attempt to get everybody in the same room, to get everybody to resolve this matter.
Well, They have agreed to sit down and talk with some of the rebel factions involved, because Eastern Congo is full of over 150 rebel factions. But the group that they are refusing to sit down and talk to are the M23, and they are really the big rebel group that everyone is worried about. And they say they don't want to give them credibility, and that there's no point talking to them anyway, because this is a puppet organization, and that behind the M23 lies Rwanda, so they might as well just talk and negotiate with Rwanda. I think there's a point to that argument. I mean, I think there's absolutely no doubt in anyone's minds that Rwanda is the sort of the key power behind the M23. But I think there's also a certain diplomatic impatience with the fact that President Felix Tshisekedi has refused to talk to the M23, and there's a feeling that they sort of need to do that.
Was Rwanda not keen to talk? My understanding was Rwanda was willing to talk.
No, I'm talking about Congo not being willing. The Congolese government has refused to meet with the M23 face to face. It's refused to have any negotiations with the M23.
Yes.
And Rwanda is saying, you need to talk to them. And Kinshasa, Congo, is saying, you know, you're the hand behind them, so, you know, we'll just talk to you. No, Rwanda has turned up for some of these talks. It has been engaged in the Rwanda peace process. Sorry, I misunderstood you.
Yes.
It's also been involved in discussions at the East African level.
Yes.
But it is noticeable that the last big meeting that was scheduled in Angola, in Luanda, Kagame didn't even turn up for it. So at that point, the sort of peace process seemed to collapse, and that was largely because Kagame did not turn up for it. So there have been, you know, years of discussions and mediation going on. And I think, you know, diplomats who are trying to broker these talks and encourage progress to be made have become very exasperated with both sides and have raised questions about the good faith of both sides.
And in this case, for me, that's the issue. Who would be, you know, sort of a credible mediator? We've seen how murky the water have become for South Africa, who were supposedly there for peace. And now we know, you know, that was not quite, they were not quite a peace mission. They were on the offensive somewhat. So who would be a credible mediator?
Well, I would tend to query that interpretation. I mean, if you're you're a peacekeeping force and you're stationed in an area which comes under attack, and then you deal with the attackers, I think that's still part of a peacekeeping operation. But I know that's the line of argument that has been taken by some. I think there's a problem because I think both sides are very good at saying we won't talk to so-and-so because they're not credible. So, for example, a lot of diplomats have put a lot of work into the Luanda process. And what we know is that Kagame has said he's not interested in taking part in it anymore. He doesn't credit Angola and the Angola president as playing a useful role anymore. But we also have a similar problem in that Felix Tshisekedi in Congo doesn't trust or think that William Ruto, the Kenyan president, is a credible mediator on that side. Mm. William Ruto is very close to Kagame. He has expressed his admiration for Kagame in several instances. Some people in Kenya would say that he models his behavior and his tactics on the way Kagame operates. So I think, you know, there's certainly justified suspicions on that side. I think this is a problem because, you know, it does raise questions about how sincere either party are to you know, both of them have been saying, oh, well, you know, you can't solve this on the battleground. You have to solve this through talks. But then they don't give the talks a chance. Mm. And I think as someone who's watched this process for a while and also watched previous, civil wars and Rwandan back invasions of Congo, I think that these things get decided on the ground. Mm. Because it comes to a stage where, you know, we can work out who has really got the forces on the ground and who has got which objectives.
The M23, is there any legitimacy to their, you know, what they're saying is their plight and their objective, you know, standing up for the minority Tutsis? Just your sense on that.
It's a very hypocritical stance because there's no doubt that Congolese Tutsis are having a really, really tough time. They have been, you know, some of them have been lynched, they've been attacked, they've been murdered. But what analysts point out is one of the reasons they're being targeted is because the M23, you know, has presented itself as their protectors. Congolese people living in the east of Congo feel under direct attack by Rwanda. Mm. And therefore, they're looking at Congolese Tutsis who live amongst them and saying, well, you're potential fifth columnists. We can't trust you. You're with the enemy. Mm. So living conditions have really deteriorated. And, you know, they are in danger now, Congolese Tutsis. But it's actually thanks to the M23 action. I think the other argument you hear now the M23 is saying, and it's absolutely laughable, is they sort of say that, and Kagame has echoed this, is that the FDLR, this group of Hutu extremists who are working alongside the Congolese army, that they represent an existential threat to Rwanda. And I don't know a single analyst who believes that's at all credible. It's a very small group of about between 600 and 1,000 men. You know, they certainly don't pose an existential crisis, existential challenge to Rwanda, which after all has one of the most effective, well-armed, well-equipped armies in the region, as we have seen, sadly.
Parts of Europe have already told, you know, Kagame that, you know, behave yourself or else. Do you think they're going to, you know, to actually exercise that warning?
I think what experience has shown with Kagame is that he reacts to actions and not words. And he'll be looking at what has happened, you know, since Goma fell, and he'll be thinking lots of bluster, lots of strong declarations. Mm. Okay, I've lost a few friends, but there are no sanctions, there are no trade embargoes being announced. Germany has said it's suspending talks. Britain has threatened to suspend aid. Nothing happening on the ground. There's been a freeze of aid, which was announced around the globe by the US. That wasn't targeted at me. Well, I'll just carry on. You know, this is an era in which Putin does what he wants in Ukraine. Israel does what it wants in Gaza and the West Bank. You know, Trump is announcing all sorts of aims on Greenland, Canada and Panama. I can do what I want. This is my backyard.
Well, perhaps he's partly right in the sense that as opposed to the 2012 era, he's gained a little bit of, you know, leverage. He's got some nice relationships with the EU, some lovely relationship with the UK. And so maybe they would have to do more than just warn him this time around.
I think they have to do more than one. I mean, it's worth pointing out that in 2012, when the M23 encircled Goma, yes. they did do more than just warn. Yes. They cut off aid.
Yeah.
But this time, I think he certainly can't count on the UK for having a continuing warm relationship, because we've had a change of government and the Labour government is being much more outspoken now and connecting, you know, directly linking Rwanda and the problem with the M23, which it never did before during the Conservative government. So we can't count on the UK turning a blind eye anymore. Mm. I think the EU is going to be a very important player. I don't know which way it's going to go, but I know there's certainly pressure from some of the member states who are saying, we have emboldened Kagame by giving him such generous aid packages, you know, and not calling a halt to what was clearly building up for several years.
Do you think this will happen soon? Do you think, you know, there will be action soon by Europe?
I think if it doesn't happen soon, it better not happen at all, because it will be pointless. I mean, as I speak to you, the M23 are advancing on the southern capital, Bukavu. They're said to be about 60 kilometres away. We've got the danger of a regional war breaking out, because we've got Burundian troops who are not far from Bukavu supporting the Congolese government. We're also hearing from diplomats in the region that Ugandan troops are now crossing into the area north of the Kivus around Ituri, that there are thousands of Ugandan troops crossing into that area, possibly with their eyes on a land grab of their own in support of Rwanda's. So this is fast escalating. You know, this is becoming a regional war, not just a war between Congo and Rwanda. And if the EU doesn't take steps soon, you know, it will be too late.
And SADC's positioning in all of this is also very interesting. What do you think, you know, they need to do?
Well, I have found South Africa's attitude completely exasperating, because, you know, I was one of the very, very, very few journalists who bothered to go to South Africa and cover the inquest into Patrick Carrigaia's murder in a South African hotel. Mm. He was clearly murdered by an assassination squad that had been sent from Rwanda by Kigali on Kagame's orders. He was a former head of intelligence in Rwanda. I covered also the fact that General Kayumba Nyamwasa, who was the target of something like 4 or 5 assassination attempts in South Africa. You know, it took years before South Africa expelled the diplomats who had allowed and arranged for those attacks to take place on Rwandan exiles living in South Africa. We then have sort of incidents in which Ramaphosa, your president, goes to Kigali and tries to normalize relationships. I don't know why he felt that was necessary, but also trying to normalize. He came back from Kigali with his phone infected with Pegasus, with the spyware. So I think there have been so many moments in which the Rwandans have not shown good faith, have not shown an interest in normalizing relations with South Africa, have not acted as potential allies or good neighbors. And it seems to me that South Africa sort of allows itself to be slapped in the face repeatedly and then doesn't respond. And I've found it very curious that there is so little response. So it seems to me that the horrible and tragic death of these peacekeepers is just the latest in a series of slaps in the face. And I think it's really up to South Africa to decide how strongly it's going to respond, because at a certain stage, if you don't respond and if you just take it, you know, people will, you know, neighboring countries will continue to walk all over you.
Author of the book called Do Not Disturb. That's a book on Rwanda. Michaela Rong, thank you so much for making time for us. Thank you very much for coming through.
It's a pleasure.
And then listening into that conversation is a retired SNDF general, Maumela Mutau. Thank you so much for making time for us, General. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening and for hosting me.
General, you know, we would have to understand as South Africans, I'm sure you've been following where the story is developing to now, and we are hearing that it's fast escalating to become maybe a regional conflict. What's your take on how we as South Africans are reacting to it diplomatically?
Look, I was listening and I thought I thought we all now understand that Rwanda will always be supported by Uganda for historical reasons, because the two countries have always wanted to have part of the Congo into their own countries to gain access to the resources of the Congo. And they had a concept which they call the Hima Empire Resuscitation. And that is the problem which you have there. Now, I agree with the previous guest to our show that, you see, you can't convince Kagame diplomatically that he must withdraw from the Congo and have good neighborliness with the Congo. You can't. Kagame understands only one thing. He understands the threat of the use of force. Mm. That is the only thing he does. South Africa and SADC are talking these interesting languages, though they don't know the problem. We were the people who negotiated and demystified what Kagame was.
Let's try and get back to that line with the retired SNDF General Maumela Mutau. Thank you so much for returning back to us, General. I hope the line is holding up.
I hope it will hold.
Okay. You know, it interrupted you while you were explaining, General, your assessment of how Kagame deals with, you know, either threats or no threats.
Yeah. You see, you can't. I remember President Mandela had to send a delegation, a powerful delegation, to go and make sure Kagame understands that we are not going to tolerate this thing. And throughout the years, Kagame tolerated. But I think at the present moment, Kagame is sure that the people in power in South Africa and Southern Africa are not as tough as the previous one. And therefore, he's playing this game. And unless South Africa changes its attitude, you know, particularly the president, I heard him talking, addressing the issue of Trump. He was very resolute, very strong. But when we come to Rwanda, he's not doing that. And Rwanda is actually taking advantage of that fact. He even calls him a liar. I don't know whether... diplomatically is correct.
And that's a very important point you make. What do you think informs President Cyril Ramaphosa's attitude towards Rwanda?
I think I'm still trying to find out myself, because I don't understand, except that perhaps he has got this thing that he likes negotiations and peaceful resolutions of that thing. But I don't think Kagame is allowing him to take it that far to talk about diplomacy. Kagame is provoking him to prove to everybody that South Africa cannot do anything, so the others must not try.
So what do you think informs Kagame in his attitude towards South Africa?
As I'm saying...
Yeah.
Kagame believes that South African leadership today is very weak. It's not strong enough. The leadership cannot promise to clap him, you know, because they are too democratic, so to say. He came to South Africa. I heard your guest saying it. He came to South Africa, killed his own comrade. The people who make sure the RPF reaches Kigali, he chased them around, killed them. A general, the Patrick Karegeya was killed there, you know. General Kayumba almost died. And South Africa didn't actually take measures against Rwanda. Today, South Africa is unable even to recall its ambassador, a simple diplomatic thing which is done by everybody, to recall the ambassador for consultation so that we demonstrate that we are unhappy with the killing of 14 of our soldiers. And I can tell you, there are 28 soldiers there who are critical, who are supposed to be evacuated. South Africa is not taking it like it's a crisis. It's a serious crisis.
Should South Africa withdraw from this mission?
You know, Kagame is banking on that fact that South Africa will withdraw. And for me, that would be the biggest, biggest mistake. Because our soldiers, no soldier will ever accept to be sent anywhere. Soldiers are simple people. If you betray them, because those soldiers in Goma there, they feel betrayed. They feel that their commanders have actually ran away from them. They've abandoned them. You know, they are enjoying them their lives here. Others, the chief of the defense force can fly abroad. You know, can still go abroad. You know, as if there is no crisis at home. And when you talk to them, they pretend that like they understand and know what to do. We have an experience. I've got men and women who were there on the ground when we dealt with the problem of Congo and brought peace.
Kagame says that President Cyril Ramaphosa had called him asking for assistance to get access to give access to our soldiers, to get food, electricity, and so on. Clearly, the situation is quite precarious. In the absence of South Africa withdrawing, what do you think South African soldiers' fate is then in the DRC right now?
You know, South Africa has got enough firepower to be able to make sure that our people are going to be repatriated, the dead, and then those who are injured are going to be taken to South Africa to hospital, back home to hospital. We've got the firepower.
Okay.
We can give Kagame marching orders. But you see, what is lacking is the political will. But also lacking in this side, the military leadership, I don't think they are giving the politician options. Because there are options here, which they should be able to follow if they are willing. There are many options. Three options for me is either you play tough or you go and beg Kagame. But once you do that, Kagame will take our people to Kigali as prisoners and ask you to pick them up from Kigali. That's what he will do to demonstrate that he is winning. He needs to demonstrate to his people that he is winning so that they must be ready to carry out his will.
With all that we are seeing now, General, I mean, how do you think the DRC's army itself is coping and managing? You know, when you look at how everyone now is getting involved, you know, what do you foresee happening there?
No, you see, the Congo, unfortunately, has never had the opportunity to develop an army or a defense force of its own. You know, I think this is the time where they are going to learn to develop their force. I've been speaking to some of their people, who are saying to me, this is a lesson. We need now to move to develop our own force because we can't continue like this. Because Rwanda will never stop until somebody is capable of bashing him. Rwanda will never stop. Will never stop. I can assure you, we know. I know Kagame. I think in South Africa, I'm the one who knows Kagame better than anybody. You know?
And as you said, your bet is that he's banking on us withdrawing our troops.
Yes. He prays we do that mistake. Then
he would win.
And then he will keep his forces in Bukavu. And from Bukavu, then the whole Kivus will be hived off. And then those people who are giving him weapons, who are benefiting from the industry of cotton, gold, are going to be happy. and they will support him, and he will build a stronger economy of a new Rwanda.
General, let me ask you in a different way. What do you believe at this very moment where we are, South Africa needs to do immediately in the DRC?
The first thing is that we need to deploy a stronger force and to be able to do first things first. The first thing is to try and take our people, the injured out of Congo, the dead out of Congo, because it's hot there. Mm. The young people there are saying the bodies are decomposing. Mm. The young people there are saying, if we don't get lifted out of this place, some more people are going to die, because there were 28 seriously injured people, you know? And our country is playing a delaying tactics. SADC is going to do that. SADC is looking at South Africa to see what South Africa will do. We are the power in the region, unless we have forgotten that we are a power in the region, you know?
And but we certainly are not behaving that way, even
we are
though...
Not, yeah. We are not behaving that way because I'm not sure why we don't have the political will to do that. And now what is happening, soldiers are seeing that their commanders have deserted them. They have been deserted. They are crying there. They are now phoning everybody to say, hey, we are going to die here. They are getting food. They are eating 1 meal a day, those soldiers there. 1 meal a day. And they are being given 2,500 mils bottles of water a day in that hot climate. No.
How do we then, you know, re-energize the soldiers right now? Because I dare say we really haven't said much to give them faith at this point in time. What do you think would be the magic wand? What do we say to them right now?
Talking much will not help.
Yeah.
It is actually taking action. I think the previous guest said it. Action. Action, action. Our people think, and I think those people I saw today, Museveni has asked for buses from Rwanda to ferry his soldiers to come and support Rwanda. And I said to myself, all those people, when Zimbabwe decided to take on Rwanda, they were all running. Soldiers ran out of Congo on foot. Soldiers, because Zimbabwe had only, you know, what I call lead fighters, the Hawk. That's what they were using, you know, to maintain a superiority. South Africa has got a fighter, and the lead in fighters, the Hawks and the Gripens, fighter, and which cannot be challenged in the region. And I don't know why we are not actually using that capacity. I don't say we must go and kill the Rwandese people. I'm saying we are able to do pinpoint attack and destroy the logistics infrastructure which is supporting Rwanda and the M23 in their incursions into the Congo. We have that capacity. I don't know why we are not using it. I don't know why. And the people ask me, why do you think we are not ready to use it? I say, I don't know, really. I don't know, but I can see there is a problem in the government. There is a problem. There is a problem.
General Motau, thank you. I really appreciate you talking to us this evening. Thank you so much for your time. That was retired SNDF General Mamuela Motau there. You can hear from his voice, you know, the frustration, you know, him asking, you know, why are we not exercising our muscle? How long will it take before we actually do that? When I come back, I'll go quickly to Stilfontein. Remember Stilfontein? Yep, that was the main story for the past couple of weeks. We're back there because that character called Tiger Yeah, there's been developments there. So I'm going to be speaking to attorney at Lawyers for Human Rights, Mamedi Sibei, who we've spoken to before. But let's do that after this.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.